the paperwork is a big challenge for teachers. I feel like we don't have enough time to actually teach sometimes. It's, you know, can you collect the data for this? And I am partly like torn because from when I started, it was more the focus was on the child, not so much the paperwork. And now it's, I have to push that I need the data and I need this and I need to show that, you know, and a lot has gone on the teachers, like they're the ones that have to do the interventions, the multi, you know, tiered system of support that's out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Jennifer Sessa. Jennifer is the Director of Student Services at Island Village Montessori School in Venice, Florida. Jen, it is such a pleasure to have you here today.
Well, I appreciate you having me on your show today. Thank you very much.
So tell us a little bit about what you do and a little bit about Island Village.
Well, Island Village is a public charter school in Venice, Florida, in Sarasota County. So it's probably an educational choice for parents. So parents do choose us as a choice school for different reasons. You know, if they don't want to go to the district school or we're closer or our methodologies are a little bit different than the public schools. So, but as a public charter school, we still have to follow all of the special education laws and all of the standards and all of the testing. We still have all those responsibilities like the district schools. So in my position here, I'm the director of special education services, pretty much. So I kind of run the whole department from identifying students with disabilities with my team and seeing what exactly is going on with the students if they're struggling in school. And I make sure that we're in compliance. That's a big part of my job is the compliance piece, making sure that the individual education plans are up to date, the 504s are up to date, and all of those plans. I also do train my special education staff, making sure that they know how to write those individual education plans, that we're servicing the kids properly, all of those things. I meet with the general education teachers and brainstorm with them on things we can do for students with disabilities. And I do training with them as well.
Awesome.
And I also do teach because we are a charter school. So I still am involved with the students as well.
This hat today, this hat, this hat, this hat, this hat. I hear you.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So are you, is this particular school, is it K-12, pre-K-12? Where do you guys start and where do you end as far as like grade levels go?
Well, the charter is K-8.
K-8.
And we do have a private public school, I mean, preschool. We have a private preschool on property. So the kids can actually start in preschool, but it's not under the charter. And then a lot of them continue into our program.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Awesome. So where's your passion? What is what brought you to special education?
Well, originally it started with my own child, my oldest, and he, from a very young age, I kind of knew he was a little different in that he walked to the beat of his own drum, pretty much. And he was eventually identified with ADHD and dyslexia. When he first started school, he had a hard time reading. And I ended up not getting frustrated, but he was actually twice exceptional. He was also gifted as well. So the teachers tend to see the giftedness over the learning disability sometimes because he could talk to everyone about any topic, but he couldn't actually read it on the paper. And where we struggled with the actual phonics and decoding and all of that stuff. And so then I was like, well, I was actually in banking. So I went back to school. My degree is in psychology, but I went back to school for education. And I just ended up going this route. And I've been here at Island Village for 19 years. This is my 19th year.
Congratulations. That's
and,
awesome.
And I don't know. I have a soft spot for the ones who are struggling. So I kind of stayed with that. And it all started with him. Mm-hmm. But he eventually, you know, he's 27 now. He graduated college and can read. So all of that.
Yeah. It's amazing what, you know, people, you know, it's like, I don't know that everybody in layman, I guess, realize that there is, you know, it's not a curse, or it's not a, oh my gosh, it's not a death sentence to have a special education need, or to have, you know, I know parents that are just incredibly afraid of those labels, but those labels really, and I don't consider them labels. I consider them a way for us to help. You know, let's talk. That's not the child. That is the struggle that they're having. Let's deal with the child and their struggle and help them to overcome that struggle. Right. And
correct.
It sounds like that's exactly, I mean, that's what we do as you know, and as most of my listeners know, I'm an SLP. So, you know, it's just the whole point of what we do in IDEA is about helping kids, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is what you pointed out is difficult, because parents sometimes are afraid of that label. They don't think they're going to go to a special class or a special place. I mean, and sometimes there are kids who do need that. They do, you know, they need a more self-contained classroom. But in Florida as a whole, they want to have everybody have access to the same education. So,
Yeah, for sure. So how does special education, what does special education look like in a Montessori program? I know there are differences, and I would love to hear your take on how Montessori fits into special education, because it's all about following the child's lead, isn't it? A bit. I'm stepping outside of my, I feel really confident talking about it. So please step in and correct me if I'm incorrect.
No, you're correct. I mean, the Montessori philosophy wants to look at the whole child and follow the child. Again, that can be a little bit challenging in the public school charter model, because we still have the timelines to meet in terms of the standards and the state testing and all of that. However, we do have what we have that's different is the multi-age classrooms. So that's a Montessori philosophy where you have multi-age. So we have like K-1 classrooms that are together. The 2-3 are together, 4-5. And then our middle school goes back to a little bit more of a traditional model, but their focus is project-based learning and hands-on learning. So it's not so textbook structured. So the thing that's nice with special education is those kids that need those concrete materials is already given to us through the Montessori curriculum. So the materials are already in the classroom, and the teachers integrate that into lessons and things like that. So the kids actually learn the Montessori lessons, and then they integrate it into some traditional things, because we have to be prepared for that state testing. But those kids that need those concrete things for longer periods of time, that's always available to them in the classroom. And the kids work on the floor. Sometimes, you know, they have the ability. We also have tables.
Right. Yeah. Not everybody works on the floor. We get that.
Yeah. We don't have the traditional desks. So there's already innate movement in the classroom. So the kids have that ability to move around if they need to. So those kids that are jiggling. Anyway, but it's not this, a lot of people think it's like a free for all, and it's really not. There is structure to a classroom. There's lessons that teach the kids, you know, how to walk in a line and how to, if they're having an argument with somebody, we believe in the peace table where the kids get to sit with a mediator and work it out. And it's, so there's different things that we bring into the classrooms that, the public schools or the district schools have brought into the classrooms, because I do hear a lot about how they do more movement and different things mm-hmm. nowadays, but mm-hmm. it's already within our classrooms.
Yeah. Yeah. Education overall, I mean, your son's 27, my daughter's 27. So we're from the same era, you and I, and I'm probably older because I was a late bloomer, but the whole philosophy of education and how it has come up since, well, I graduated in 94. So, you know, I'm 30, this is my 31st year, is different. You know, what we were taught and how we were taught and how you did things and stuff. I think it was already starting to kind of move into that more, let's look at child led, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's just really education continues across the board to, and that's the thing I love about Brighter Together is that we're trying to shine a light on the things that are happening in education. What is education in the United States in 2025 versus what it was, you know, 30 years ago? So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So that's good, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. So, what would you say for you? Well, I know I was thinking about something else. I was thinking about, so how are one of the big buzzwords in education, you know, we always have things that we're working on, things that generally make it into mainstream or whatever. So, and one of them is social emotional, the big, everybody is talking about since the pandemic that kids having more difficulty with their anxiety and their emotions and their social structure. And it sounds like you guys have some really great strategies for that. So how are you guys handling that? And what are you seeing in your school?
I do agree with, you know, that kids are dealing with a lot more, a lot of pressures, a lot of things on social media that we deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Kids since the pandemic, and I do see this with my youngest daughter too. She's 19 and mm-hmm. she's started college, but they still have difficulty from that time actually communicating. And I think that stems a lot of the issues that do happen. So here at Island Village, we do have, we use the Caring School Community curriculum. Okay. So the teachers themselves in the classrooms are doing lessons with the kids on different topics that they might come across, like how do you deal when someone's, you know, mad at you? So they have in-classroom lessons as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and one of my co-teachers, because my master's degree is in applied behavior analysis, so I do work with children with social difficulties, like either they're on the spectrum or they have ADHD. We do like pull out small group social skills. So we do offer that as well. We do have a speech language person on campus who also does pragmatics
yeah.
with mm-hmm. the kids. But I mean, coming out of this time frame, I do feel like I'm constantly, well, as the director, getting diagnoses a lot more than I did when I first started this job. Because there's a lot of, you know, my child has anxiety, my child has this or that. So we are sitting in a lot of meetings about those things. But I believe it's important to teach kids coping strategies and mm-hmm. how to be resilient. And that's something that's not always happening at home. So it's left up to the schools to teach those things, those basic skills. And that's because parents are working. They have a lot on their plates mm-hmm. as well, and they don't yeah. have time. But again, if you have kids who've gone through trauma and different things, you have to teach them how to deal with that, because they are going to grow up and they need to function and the world.
We all feel it. Students are struggling more than ever with emotional and behavioral challenges. Lighthouse Therapy offers virtual, hybrid, and in-person behavioral and mental health support that builds around your school environment. Our licensed professionals are trauma-informed, experienced, and trained to work with K-12 students and staff. You don't get a cookie-cutter approach. You get a partner who listens, adapts, and builds trust. because when students feel safe and seen, they thrive. Learn how you can get support at your school at lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together.
Right.
Solid.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, they're dealing with things that we didn't even know existed, you know, when we were kids. Just, you know, the phones and social media, and, you know, it's like, it was passing notes when we
were. Yeah. I do remember passing notes and being like, hey, give this to someone.
They don't even do that. They don't even know what that is anymore. It's so funny, too. They don't pick up the phone. That's just something that, you know, my kids are 20. My daughter will be 28 in January. It is December 9th. For those of you that are listening, that's why I've got Christmas background. It's before Christmas. This episode will probably come out after Christmas. And I, you know, it's like one of those things. But I love Christmas. I can't not decorate for Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
It feels off to me, even though I know that people are going to be like, wow, that was before Christmas. But my daughter's going to be 28, my son's 26, and my other son is 23. And they have phones. Everybody has a phone, right? Everybody has a cell phone, but it is not a phone. They do not use it as a telephone ever. It is a computer in their hand that gives them access to the internet and to social media and TikTok and whatever else. They would much rather message me on Messenger or send me most of them work for me. So we have an intercompany message system that they use, but they don't call, they don't make phone calls. They don't, I mean, it's a generational thing. It really is. And it just astounds me. Nope, I'll just text them.
Well, that's the thing. Like my son, I have another son who's 24, and he is on social media trying to become a social influencer person. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. But, and then my daughter with the whole thing, like, if I explain to her, like, she's a sophomore in college, so she's wants to, if I tell her, why don't you go speak to the professor or this, she's like, well, I emailed. Uh-huh. There's always, they don't want that face-to-face interaction, which is different for us. Yeah. 'Cause I'm always like, well, go to the person, find out the answer, then come back and, you know, see
bypass
what they
all
say.
Of that, right?
Yeah. I'm just like,
just go straight to the source, like, right? Like, go talk to them. Let's have human interactions. What is that, right? Yeah, it's interesting. It's a different world. It's a world that I couldn't have even imagined, you know, even 20 years ago. You look at 20 years ago and we'd be in, you know, 2005. And it just isn't, that's just not the world that we live in today. And these kids are just having to navigate that. And I don't know, it just feels like sometimes there's a short circuit and it's like, they just don't want to do that. And it just isn't comfortable for them. And yet it's critical to human interaction and to being able to make those connections and understanding how the world works. And I don't know, they're figuring it out their own way, but it's just different. It's just, and I don't know that there's an answer. There's no 100% answer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So awesome. So what would you say is one of your biggest challenges right now for, you know, your position or for the students? I know we've talked about the social media and the social emotional learning stuff, but what would you say to a colleague who's coming up into education, into special education, and with these challenges, what would your recommendations or what would you say to them, or what advice? There's the word I want. I couldn't find that word. What advice would you give a younger person who's coming into a role like what you do?
Well, I do know that not a lot of younger people aren't going into education because it's become more difficult field, especially the expectations of teachers. The paperwork is a big challenge for teachers. I feel like they don't have enough time to actually teach sometimes. It's, you know, can you collect the data for this? And I am partly like torn because from when I started, it was more the focus was on the child, not so much the paperwork. And now it's, I have to push that I need the data and I need this and I need to show that, you know, and a lot has gone on the teachers, like they're the ones that have to do the interventions, the multi, you know, tiered system of support that's mm-hmm. out there.
Yep.
And they're the ones that have to present that to me at my team meetings to say, hey, we don't think this child is making, you know, and the other challenge is I know that they want to have the students with disabilities in the general education classrooms, but sometimes that is hard for the teachers because they're not always, as much as I try to train, they don't go for, and they'll say that to me, I'm not specially trained in behavior like you are mm-hmm. because, you know, I've done like in home with kids with autism, you know, I have different training that I've gone to, and that's hard to teach. They're like, oh, when you come in for the behavior kit, they stop doing that because. And I said, but that's also what I would tell new teachers. I always tell my teachers now, it's about building relationships with those kids that are having a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember where they're coming from. But then it's also hard for teachers because they have their personal lives too. So it's like everybody's dealing with their outside stuff. And then they come here to school and it has to all
Yeah, they're managing
together.
A whole classroom, right? Yeah, for sure.
With
yeah.
those kids, it's hard mm-hmm. because you have 20 something other kids
mm-hmm.
and you do have my newer teachers come out being very idealistic, like I want to do this and I want to do that, but then when you get there and you have this one who's like spinning in a chair and this one doesn't want to listen and this one, you know, it's very hard to work with all those personalities
mm-hmm.
So I would just tell new teachers, you have to balance a lot and be patient and you know.
Yeah.
And I feel bad as to how education has changed sometimes because it is a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of data collection and a lot of things that, it's a rewarding career. It's an absolutely rewarding career. It's just, you don't always see those rewards immediately. And it isn't, but you are making a difference every single day, every single day. We know that, right? You and I know that.
I do. Like when I go to the high school graduations and I see my students that when they were like 8 years old and they couldn't sit in one spot or read, and then there they are graduating high school, it makes me happy. Or I see them or, you know, they're doing something else with their lives. That to me has always been the greatest feeling, really.
Right. Yeah. Because without your intervention, without all of these people all throughout their education, it takes a village, as they say, right? But
uh-huh.
to be instrumental in that village is what teaching is all about. And finding their, you know, helping them to find their passion and helping them win that light bulb moment we talk about when that goes off and they get it. Oh, there's nothing like that. When that child just, you're working and working and working and working on a skill, and then all of a sudden you just see they get it. They just get it. And once they get it, they've got it. It's not like it's going to go away, which is beautiful because, you know, it's like, wow, we've got it. And we talked about, you know, sometimes there might be review, but it's easier for them to pull back and go, okay, I get it. I remember we did that. And now it, and then it builds on itself. Right. So
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Fantastic. Awesome. Well, what would you say, I'm fumbling with my words there. So I try to always ask this question. I don't always get it out, but what would you say is the one thing? And I always tell people not money, because, you know, everybody needs more money. Every school needs more money. But if you could miraculously fix just one thing in your world of the things that you deal with your job, what would be that one thing that you would want to fix and never have to worry about it again? What would that one thing be?
It would have to be less paperwork, because I feel like the paperwork process has become so overwhelming mm-hmm. that a lot of us are spending so much time like I have sometimes I feel like ridiculous pieces of paper that I have to hand out at my IEP meetings or 504 meetings, whereas, and not that that paperwork's not important, it is, but it was so, like, every time we go back, or I feel like I go to a training, they're like, oh, this needs to be in the paperwork, and this needs to be in the paperwork. And sometimes I'm like, you know what, if I didn't have that much paperwork, I could actually work with kids more than I have time to do now. And mm-hmm. that's, like, changed throughout the years. Mm-hmm. I had more, I used to teach more than I taught and still did this job, but now I have obviously more kids coming on caseload all the time, but I also have more paperwork to do all the time. Right. And I just feel like, and I know it needs to be there, but I would just like to engage more with the kids and have more time for the kids. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I get it. I get it. Yeah. And I think SLPs, we say the same things, you know, they, ASHA, the American Speech Language Hearing Association, does a survey every year. And that's one of the top ones that they, you know, what do you like the most about your job, or what do you want the most and what do you want the least? And it's like, please less paperwork, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is some hopefully some support coming along with that as we get more automated, but we don't want to get with AI. But I don't, you know, again, you got to be careful and balance that act too, because, you know, AI isn't a human and they're not going to be able to put in the things that we as humans do. So I don't know. It's a balancing act. It's a changing world. We keep stepping into it, don't we, Jen? We just keep stepping into it.
That's true.
So, Jen, where do people go if they want to learn more about Island Village Montessori and what you do?
Okay, so we have a website, it's islandvillage.org, and you can go to that website and it talks about our philosophy as a Montessori public charter school. It talks about all of our different programs, the preschool, the K-8 program, and all of that. It has definitions of our staff are all on there and their backgrounds and who works here. And we always offer tours. Parents can come and tour the campus and see if it is a fit for their child. And everything's on that website.
Awesome. Well, Jen, it has been a pleasure having you on Brighter Together. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. And even though it's going to be after Christmas, I hope you have a wonderful holiday season and spend time with the ones you love. It's a beautiful time of year.
Yeah, I'm the same to you. And I appreciate you having me as a guest.
Awesome. Thank you.